Yeah, it's hour number two, Robbie and Rexroad. Joe Rexroad here with Adam Vingan in for Robbie today, Michelle Knezovic, and we're very excited to bring in our next guest. He normally joins us on Thursdays this week. He's with us on Friday. Tough loss to me in Jared versus Joe. Now, Jared Stillman, PI, as I put in the grid here, Jared Stillman, PI, our private investigator, who has got the Titans hiring people so they can get intel on Aaron Rodgers. That was quite a take. Jared, how are you?
Good to be with you boys. Had a great time last night at the Predators game with Adam Vingan.
Yeah.
It was good to watch the game and catch up with Adam. And, you know, Hal Gill was busting my chops yesterday. Apparently, I'm too negative on the Predators, though I'm not sure I could totally see the positive all the time. But Hal was busting my chops that I needed to watch the game. Hal lately has gotten, you know, we've been interviewing Hal for 5 years, and he's gotten very into the you don't know the game card lately. And so I was glad that I was able to watch the game with somebody who undisputedly, I don't know if that's a word or not.
Indisputably, but you're fine. You're
indisputably close. Knows the game like Adam does. Oh, so he had a blast last night watching the game with Adam.
So Hal, okay, I missed this with Hal. So Hal's doing the you don't understand hockey kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, having not heard that, I mean, I got to say, you know, I gotta, without knowing exactly the contents of that conversation, I think at this point, I would have to side with you a little bit more. I mean, it hurts to say it, but I mean, this team isn't very good right now. So tell me some of the insights you got from your mandate with Vingan at the Preds game last night.
I mean, I would say some of the insights I got is that the hockey team's not very good. And that I don't really think that, I mean, we can get technical with it. Adam would obviously be much better at that than I would be. But, I mean, I joked with Adam yesterday. I felt like I was watching the Nashville Sounds host the Yankees last night. And that's what I would expect the Sounds versus the Yankees to look like. I mean, if the Predators take a shot from the point, and, you know, fire one 8 feet wide of the net, and all of a sudden Brad Marchand comes down the other side at a 3-on-1 with Patrice Bergeron, drops it back to Bergeron, drops it back to Marchand, who puts it in the net. Saros never had a chance. And that was, you know, I'm not going to say that was the whole night, because in the third period, the Bruins really packed it in. And I don't think, you know, I said to Adam at one point, I go, I don't know if I've seen David Pastrnak this entire period. Up 4-0 for the Bruins, and they still scored another goal. So, I mean, I think that last night it was the haves versus the have-nots. And I think at this point, I don't think anybody, you know, David Poile came on your show, you know, earlier in the week and talked about not being a buyer and maybe being a seller. And I think we're at a point in time now where I don't even think the most optimistic Predators fan can believe what, you know, can believe that this team is anything more than what they are, which is a fringe playoff team who may find less benefit long-term by making the playoffs than they would by missing the playoffs.
And I think, look, Jared and I, obviously, we agree on a lot of the things about, a lot of things about the team. I think the one thing that we were talking about last night that we didn't necessarily see eye to eye on was the benefit of firing John Hines in season. You know, as I talked about with Jared last night and you, Joe, earlier, I can't recall a coaching change this late in the season when a team is, let me emphasize this word again, technically still in a playoff race. You know, Jared, as Jared likes to say, you know, teams get a sugar high when they make a coaching change. I asked Jared last night, I said, do you think if they were to fire John Hines, they'd have enough of a sugar high to make the playoffs? He said yes. I said no. So I'd be curious for Jared to expand on that point, on whether he thinks, why he thinks a coaching change made now would help the Predators make the playoffs.
Before he answers, I mean, Jared's tried to fire John Hines since day one.
I know.
You know, so this is, but go ahead, Jared.
So a couple of thoughts here. First off, on the sugar high and everything. Sugar high comes when you fire the coach. I think we all know that. It's not, you know, it's not like a long-term thing, but it is something that you fire the coach, it moves the room, and for the most part, the team starts playing at least a little bit better. And that is generally what happens. I think John Hines is such a bad coach that by bringing somebody else in, I've said this yesterday, if Carl Taylor at Milwaukee, the Admirals coach, if he's just not a bad coach, then you get an upgrade at coach immediately. So you go from bad coach to not bad coach. That is an improvement. Secondly, I think that the young players who, if you decide to sell or if you're being realistic about the season and you're going to say, look, Tomasino's development now becomes important. If you're going to focus on the young players, then John Hines is not the guy because he hasn't developed any young players on this team. I mean, right now he's got Yusso Parsonen on the fourth line, and that's probably the best quote-unquote young player that they have right now. I mean, Tomasino has not developed well enough under Hines. Fabbro has not developed well enough under Hines. They already got rid of Tolvanen because he wasn't developing under Hines. That's really not a good trip to the heart of your batting order of first-round picks. So I'm worried about the development of the young players. I'll bring up the Milwaukee coach, who I think is probably a better developer of young players than Hines is, who has no track record whatsoever of developing young players. That's the number one reason for me. Back to your point, though, about me wanting to fire Hines from day one. Let me just say this. I argued that when the Predators turned it around in that 2021 season, I argued that John Hines should have been in the discussion for the Jack Adams Award for Coach of the Year because of the way they turned that season around. It has not been all bad as far as my takes on John Hines. But I almost feel like I'm the only person in the world who looked at the resume that John Hines walked in on and said, wait a minute, this isn't Gerard Gallant. This isn't Peter DeBoer. This isn't these coaches that were, you know, being hired and fired around the same time that the Predators decided to dump on Peter Laviolette. And I'm like, wait a minute, you're dumping Peter Laviolette and you're hiring this guy's got no resume. And David and the Predators are, just trust us, just trust us, just trust us. And everybody trusted him except for me. And I was right.
Okay. First of all, see, this is where someone like Hal Gill gets frustrated with you because you have to take it. Oh, he's such a bad coach.
He's a bad coach, Joe. How's he a good coach?
Because
last year he got 40 goals out of Matthew Shane.
Is he such a bad coach? Is he such a bad coach? So here's the thing. Again, you've done this consistently, and good for you if you were praising him in 21. I don't remember that, but whatever. You want to put way too much on him, and then it's like you're forgetting that the issue with this team is the roster. Again, I'm not saying John Hines is doing a good job this year.
Every time I say Hines is a bad coach. Every time I say Hines is a bad coach, you act like I am treating it as if it is mutually exclusive.
No, but you're also a spin doctor who doesn't mention Cody Glass, who doesn't mention Tanner Janot. There have been
that's because they're no good.
Okay.
They're no good.
Here we go.
So Cody again, Glass.
How many goals does he have? Man,
Cody see, Glass.
Jared, you're hurting yourself, Jared.
You are going to try to
this
me,
hyperbolic
between the two guys that you're. So I'm looking at my first round picks.
Precious Peter Laviolette had Dante Fabbro. Oh, the infallible Peter Laviolette had Ellie Tolvanen. So it's all on the other guy. It couldn't be Peter. Couldn't be that he, you know, needed to be fired when he was fired.
I would argue that Ellie Tolvanen's lack of development is not Peter Laviolette's fault. That I would.
I'm just saying he had part of him. He had a couple years of him.
Didn't he have Tolvanen for like 2 weeks?
He was mostly in the AHL.
Yeah,
I feel
yeah.
Like.
He brought him put up that on Laviolette.
He's this incredible developer of talent.
Back to the point I was making about like every time I bring up Hines, you automatically pivot to this. It's the roster. It's not Hines.
Well, it is.
And you treat it as if it is mutually exclusive or that my criticism of the Predators has been only reserved for John Hines.
No, but it's
and
it's,
I have
it's,
also
it's
not been the loudest voice
it's
in the history of the city of Nashville that has said that it is time for David Poile to pack it up and go.
So
I'm the one that was yelling at both of you guys 2.5 years ago,
well, you
that they
fire,
needed
now,
to fire David Poile,
you
and you two
fire
were like, I don't know if
time.
I'm going to write that column right now.
You want to fire everyone all the time. I know. Listen.
No,
oh,
that's not
yeah.
it.
Oh.
I don't want to fire Mike Vrabel because Mike Vrabel's a good coach. I want to fire David Poile because he's a bad general manager and has been bad for the last 5 years. I want to fire John Hines because he's a bad coach and he has never won anything, and I am sick and tired of the Hals and the Willies telling me, look, I know John Hines has never won anything, but he's a great coach. How? Tell me. Yeah. Give me an example.
Okay, so there. Okay, now if someone
other than Cody Glass.
Hold on a second. Now, if someone said great, I would also argue with that. I'm like, I don't think that he's demonstrated great, but such a bad coach, hyperbole. Listen, let me ask you this: would you rather this firing of John Hines right now and this sugar rush take place, or would you rather the Preds sell and start working on solutions right now and not worry about the coach and a sugar rush?
Why can't they do both?
What? So, oh, let's get a sugar rush and then let's blow up the team. What are you talking about? It's not, I mean, you got to pick one or the other there.
Adam asked me if they were more likely to make the playoffs if they fired John Hines. I said yes because of the sugar high that comes from firing the coach. But that doesn't mean that my number one goal is to get that sugar high and win some games. Because I don't, that doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is the development of the young players. And I'm not talking about the young players who, you know, have very limited ceilings. I'm talking about the young players that are supposed to be the dogs of this organization. You know, the Philip Tomasinos, those kind of guys. That's my number one thing, because I am going to sell. And so when I sell, I am going to have a team of a bunch of young guys, and my number one thing is developing them. And I don't think Hines is the guy to do it. I don't think Hines has the track record that shows that he's developing young players. And I think the Ellie Tolvanen thing is a humongous black mark on John Hines' resume. And so that's the number one reason why I'm firing the coach. The question was, do I think they have a better chance of making the playoffs if they fire the coach? The answer is yes. I don't want them to make the playoffs. If they make the playoffs, then they're going to excuse every mistake that they've made, and they're going to say, see, we're right there. We can compete with the best teams in the league, even though last night was a clear and obvious example that they cannot. And even they know it now. But if they were to make the playoffs, I think that would change their mind like it did 2 years ago and really ruined a lot of the potential progress that they could have made turning the page into the next chapter of Predators hockey. But as far as, like, would I rather make the playoffs than sell off? No. Sell, sell, sell. I do not want to make the playoffs. If this team could make the playoffs and treat it like, say, Dallas did, where they made the playoffs, lost in the first round, and still fired people and moved on, and now you look at their organization, then I'd be fine with it. But the truth is, I know that if this team makes the playoffs with this management structure in place, they will use it as a data point to suggest that this team is better than they actually are.
Jared, you know, we walked into the game together. We saw the amount of Bruins fans that were there, and we expected that. And, I mean, what did you make of the atmosphere last night? And if you are a member of the ownership group or the front office and you're seeing that atmosphere basically TD Garden South for the Bruins last night, like, what's going through your mind as you see that?
I think what would be going through my mind is, oh, my God, my home game has turned into a Vanderbilt SEC football game with a nicer stadium. Because it's like, Joe, and I know you love covering Vandy football, and I know that you, when Georgia comes to town or Alabama comes to town or Tennessee comes to town or, you know, any of those teams come to town, you know, like the true traditional, the original six of the SEC, you know, when they come to town, we all know what that Vandy stadium looks like. That's what it was yesterday at Bridgestone Arena, which we expected. I mean, there's a ton of Bruins fans in the market. Somebody told me that years ago they did some kind of survey. And when they did a survey, the Predators did, they were stunned to see how many local Boston Bruin fans there are. And the Bruins have been very good lately. And the Bruins, obviously an original six franchise, tons of history. You know, guys like Cam Neely and Bobby Orr and, you know, some of the best players in the history of the NHL. So I don't think it's totally a shock. It kind of reminded me, there was a 2012 game before you guys were here against the Chicago Bears where the Titans got blown out and Bud Adams got on his plane at halftime because he was tired of watching it and told Jim Wyatt how mad he was. And the Chicago Bear fans had forced Broadway out of beer that weekend, that there were so many Chicago Bear fans in town. Kind of felt like that. Maybe that's a little extreme, but if I owned the team, I mean, like, if I owned the team, things would be totally different. And maybe for the, you know, hard to say that it'd be for the worse, but maybe for the worse. But I think that everything that this team had built up, what I'm really worried about, and I say this as a fan more than anything else, what this team had built up, you know, with the 17 run and the 18 President's Trophy and even being competitive in 19 and not winning in the playoffs and the anger that came from that first-round playoff exit, what they had built up, I feel like, is starting to kind of deteriorate down to where it was before all of that. And I don't like that. I mean, not only as a fan do I not like that, but also as a broadcaster, I don't like it because it's more fun when the team, you know, is what people are buzzing about in the city. And right now, I think even for people that love the team, I think there's kind of this sense of, well, it's just going to be same old, same old. And that, I think, that to me, I think is really tough.
Never let anyone tell you Jared cannot bloviate. Thank you, Jared. Jared Stillman, 2-6 today. You can get more of that. Appreciate you.
See you guys.
And we will react to Jared and get into some Preds solutions. Let's start talking solutions. Robbie and Rex Show, Adam Vingan, in for Robbie, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Studio sponsored by Hillier Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Of course, if you want to get in the conversation, the phone or text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. And you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Talking Preds, following up on Jared Stillman, who talked way too long. But he had some interesting things to say. I continue to be of the mind that he's overstating the John Hines issue. Someone on the text line says, Joe, do you think John Hines has done a good job and or made the most of what this roster provides? Again, I can't say John Hines did a good job this year. I mean, it's like the results ultimately tell that story, don't they? I mean, you can just simplify it. Like, what are the results? Yes, relative to expectations, relative to talent on paper, certainly not good enough. So, no, I don't think John Hines has helped himself or done a good enough job this season. I'm putting more on some of the individuals on this team who aren't playing their highest level, and I think that some of them, Adam, maybe just past that highest level. I mean, you know, I don't know how much of this season is underperforming as compared with just sort of performing at what certain players are anymore. I mean, this is an aging team, it's an aging core, and it's been a pretty good core, but it's not a core that can match up with teams like, I don't know, say Boston.
Yeah, look, we've talked about this many, many times about the performances that many of these players had last year. Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg, Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson, Tanner Jeannot, so on and so forth. And we all expected some sort of regression. And to me, I think Roman Josi has had a typical Roman Josi season. Nobody expected him to have the production he had last year. It was, you know, was historic in the sense that it had been like 30 years since a defenseman had as many points as he did last season. I think Philip Forsberg and Matt Duchene have regressed to what they are, what they have shown to be in their careers, which are good but not great scoring forwards. Last year to me was an outlier for both players. You know, and I think Ryan Johansson as well. You know, the player who has had, you know, I think, well, obviously Tanner Jeannot, he only has 5 goals this year, but after having 24 last year. But the player whose regression has been the steepest to me and perhaps the biggest surprise is Mikael Granlund. You know, considering how important Granlund has been to John Hines. I mean, if you look at the overall ice time per game since John Hines became coach, I think Granlund might lead all forwards.
He completely transferred. That was one. Laviolette to Hines completely changed Granlund's trajectory here, remember?
Yes.
I mean, it was like, oh, here's a coach who puts – whatever. It works with this coach and this player.
But Granlund, he has 6 goals and 29 points in 52 games. Last season, he had 11 goals and 53 assists, 64 points in 80 games. Now, the last year, he spent a lot of time playing with Forsberg and Duchene while having their career years, and he benefited from that. But, you know, he has fallen off dramatically. And to me, that has probably been the biggest surprise in terms of the regression that I've seen from players year over year.
And, you know, look, I have no idea what's going on individually with each person here, but to me, I mean, he's 31. He's had, I mean, he's been in this league since as a full-time player for 10 years. And sometimes that mileage just starts to show, right? I mean, that's probably the simplest explanation, and that's another just issue with this roster is there's a lot of guys like that who probably are past their best hockey, and you are dependent on them and you can't get out of contracts with them.
Well, I mean, look at their top five scores. If you sort their top five scores by points, it's Josi, I think it's Josi, Forsberg, Duchesne, Granlund, Josi, Forsberg, Duchesne, Johansson, and Granlund. I think that's the order. Or Granlund and Johansson, actually. Either way. Josi is 32. Forsberg is 28. Duchesne is 32. Granlund is 30. And I think Johansson is either 30 or 31. That's a problem. That their top five scorers are all in their, you know, four of them are in their 30s and one is in his late 20s.
Now, if you want to, you know, if you want to spin the other way, you can say, yeah, but Parsonen could be really good and Evangelista's coming. And I mean, you know, I like Cody. I think Cody Glass is one of the good stories in the team this year. I think you see why he was a high pick. You're starting to see it. I don't know what you think about him, but I like Cody Glass and what I see from him. It was someone, by the way, brought up the point about Tolvin and, you know, he did have 2 years with Carl Taylor, Jared's coaching solution here. But let me get into this. Dennis says, look at Tolvanen once he got away from Hines. What do you think about that? Tolvanen in Seattle so far, I mean, I still think we saw what he was here. But, hey, if he's just going to be a totally different level of production from here, obviously that's an indictment of Hines or whatever what they were doing with him here, right? I still have my doubts that that's how it's going to end up after a bigger sample size.
I don't think Elie Tolvanen is going to become like a consistent 30 goal scorer or anything like that, but he's being put in a position that benefits his skill set in Seattle. He's playing with good players. He's playing with, I believe, Oliver Bjorkstrand and Yanni Gourde. You know, I'm sure he's getting power play time. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but he's playing with players who meet his skill set. Now, you could argue that last year he spent a lot of time with Ryan Johansson.
Right.
But on the other side, he was playing with Luke Cunningham, who was probably the worst player on the team in the sense of like what he was expected to be versus what he actually did.
Which didn't cost him ice time,
which is an indictment of John Hines. Like, there was nothing.
No, that's fair.
Which is not something that Luke Cunningham, I feel like, could not do anything to get pushed out of the top six last year, which also, I think, speaks to the roster construction, which, to your point, is the larger issue. I think the roster construction has been a larger issue than the coaching.
Yeah.
But in terms of Tolvanen, yes, I think it shows that the Predators did not do enough to put Tolvanen in a position to succeed consistently.
I just thought they did last year for the most part. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, Cunning, it doesn't help. Glenn from Laverne, real quick, I guess this is a compliment. You and Jared are good for radio, but talking about the state of the Predators is not. Adam has good insight. Nice compliment to you and Robbie. Are the Preds rebuilding? They sure are playing like they are. If you're trying to reload the team, where do you start? We're going to get into that. We're going to get to you, Bob from Antioch, also on the car after this break. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Get in on the phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, 615-737-1025. We're in the game studio, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, and we are going to go to our phone line where Bob from Antioch has been very patient. Bob, how are you? What's going on?
Good morning, guys. I don't know if y'all have talked about this or not. I apologize if you have, but Ryan McDonough's quote after the game last night really was sort of an eye-opener to me. He said that to win in the NHL, you have to be willing to do certain things, and he said Boston was willing to do that. And so, obviously, to me, the implication was Nashville isn't doing that. And I've been hearing quotes like that from players for two or three years. Really, of course, the most infamous time was after the Winter Classic. And so my question to you guys is, do you think Nashville has the reputation as being a kind of a cushy, easy place to land for a player, you know, because it's Music City, the It City, it's got all the celebrities and stuff. And it just bothers me that for the last few years, the players even themselves say, hey, we took a day off where we, you know, we just, the effort isn't there. I was just curious about that.
That's a good question. Thank you, Bob. And, you know, well, actually, Bob should be running the show because we were talking earlier about McDonough, and I forgot to go to – do we have that? Yeah, let's – I thought this was also a very interesting comment, and I thought the same exact thing. Here's Ryan McDonough after last night's 5-0 loss to the Bruins.
I think there's a lot of execution left out there by us, lack of it. You know, we see a lot of missed passes, you know, some odd man rushes where you'd like to generate something and we don't. You know, there's a willingness and a price to pay, you know, if you want to win in this league. And certainly that team was doing it consistently throughout the game. Just being disciplined, putting pucks behind us, wearing us down that way, taking what's given if there was an opportunity on odd man. And certainly, you know, didn't give us anything for free. And so I think that's the difference in the game. You know, they win the special teams, and obviously 5-on-5. So it's tough to find a way to win games when you're kind of lacking in all those areas.
That was Ryan McDonough after last night's 5-0 loss to the Bruins. And I thought the same thing. That sounded like someone saying, you know, this is what you have to do. These teams do this. And it's basically serving as a contrast. He didn't say that out loud, but I kind of took it that way.
When I like Ryan McDonough, to me, of all the players in that dressing room whose words, you know, stand out to me and actually have meaning behind them, it's Ryan McDonough. I mean, Ryan McDonough, this is his 13th NHL season. He's never missed the playoffs in his career with the Rangers and the Lightning. Obviously, he won 2 Stanley Cups with the Lightning. He was a captain in New York. This guy knows how to win. This guy is a proven winner, which most of the Predators are not. So when I hear him say something like that, it actually means something more to me than even if Roman Josi said it. So to hear Ryan McDonough say that, because he knows what it takes to win in the NHL, to hear him say that, yeah, it stands out for sure.
Now, I will say you have Josi and Forsberg and Johansson and Sissons, and you know, you have guys in this core who have gotten to within 2 wins of winning a cup, right? So, I mean, it's not like – and there is a difference between that and a guy who has skated around with the cup multiple times. Mm-hmm. But, you know what I mean? I hear you, but they should. They have enough people in this dressing room before him that should have an idea, should understand that.
True.
Now, to Bob's question, see, I understand the question, but – when the Preds have been good under Hines in their better stretches, I think they've also been tremendously physical, mm-hmm. hardworking, gritty, like doing the right things. So, like, we've seen that hockey from a lot of these guys with this coach, right?
Yes.
So it's not like this has been a consistent issue. If it was, he probably wouldn't have been the coach this long. So that's what's interesting is like they just can't. I still think it goes back to if you have to do those things. Like he said, Boston does those things. That's true. Also, Boston has a lot of margin for error with the way so many people are playing mm-hmm. and producing and score, right? This team has not enough margin for error because they're not good enough. That's my opinion. So they have to take it to, I think, a higher level on any given night to win a game to make up for their deficiencies, including this year, a power play that's just dreadful mm-hmm. out of nowhere. But I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Bob's question was about the market and, like, if playing in Nashville, it sounded like, does playing in Nashville make players soft, kind of? I don't know. I feel like that's kind of what he was hinting at. I'm not sure how much the market plays into that. And look, we have seen good hockey from this group under John Hines, as you said. Now, UC Saros deserves a lot of credit for that, and
yes.
UC Saros has made things look better than they probably are, and I think you're seeing what happens now when UC Saros, you know, is left on an island. I think you also saw it in the playoffs last year, of course. But, you know, I was struck by something that I heard Pierre LeBrun of TSN and The Athletic say last night on Insider Trading, but also has a story on The Athletic that just went up talking about the Predators' aim, approach to the trade deadline, because we were talking about solutions. This was Pierre. Quote, if this weekend goes poorly for the Predators, my understanding is that veteran GM David Poile will be ready to open the phone lines and listen on almost anyone. We really haven't heard about any Predators players on the trade front the past several weeks. That's because Poile keeps things close to the vest and he wants to give his team a chance. But if it doesn't get going right now, I believe Nashville will be ready to listen with an open mind. Matthias Ekholm, Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson, Mikael Granlin, Nino Niederreiter. If the Predators fall out of it over the next week, I truly believe the team will be ready to listen on all those players and more.
Well, some of those players listed, you know, yeah, they'd love to listen. They won't hear anything.
The fly in the ointment is the Predators don't have any pending unrestricted free agents of note, the type of players who normally get dealt at this time of year. The players I mentioned are all signed past this year. Most players on the Nashville roster are. So if the Predators become sellers, they'll be trying to make hockey deals, not rental deals, which in some ways are harder to make in season. On the other hand, it does open it up to teams looking for players signed past this year.
Right. So I'd say three come to mind I'll go four.
Okay.
I'll go four. Now, we've talked about all these, but one of them is the one that I think is really interesting. So I think McDonough, I mean, there's some term with McDonough and Ekholm. If there's a team who believes, you know, this could be not only a piece that could really elevate us this year, but now you've also, you know, you've got term after this. Nino Niederreiter, it's a 2-year deal. The money's not big. I mean, that's, I think, a possibility. And then Saros. UC Saros, 2 years left on his deal, $5 million AAV. I think one of the best bargains in the entire league. And, look, at some point, one way or the other, I think Saros or Askarov, I just think it makes sense to make a choice there and get a ton of value out of the goalie you don't choose. Obviously, if you're dealing now, a team wants a goalie who's ready to come in and start and lead them to the cup, which, of course, is not Askarov right now. Maybe you're like, no, UC Saros is the future of this franchise. He's going to have a career like Pekka with this franchise. Askarov at some point is going to be, you know, an off-season trade for a haul or whatever. To me, you tell me if you disagree. You have two assets like that, and you are so deficient elsewhere. You have to think in those terms.
Yeah, I don't think those are. I don't think a goalie trade is an in-season trade. I think that's a trade that the Predators would make in the off-season. You know, when I think about Ekholm and McDonough, I think it's obviously easier to trade Ekholm because McDonough has a no trade clause in his contract, and after being moved in the offseason, who knows if he will want to be moved again so quickly. And Ekholm has generated interest in the past when he was a pending unrestricted free agent. He's also a little bit cheaper, not that much cheaper, but a little bit cheaper. And every dollar counts. Nino Niederreiter makes a lot of sense to me to move. You know, he is a veteran in this league. I see him as like a plan B or C for a team that needs a forward that doesn't get who they want. You know, I would move him, absolutely. I would try to move Dante Fabro and see if you could get back what you traded for Jeremy Lozon. Like, can you get a second-round pick back for Dante Fabro? Maybe not, but maybe you get a third. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
Yeah, I don't think you can get a second.
But I, to me, at the deadline, I absolutely move Dante Fabro and Nino Niederreiter to start. And I would consider moving Matthias Ekholm. I'm not sure if you could convince Ryan McDonough to leave again, like to waive a no trade clause after he just did and moved his family. So those are my top three.
Okay.
At the deadline.
All right, we have a ton of thoughts on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So coming up next is Rex Rant. This is basically today is a big rant. We're going to continue the rant about the Preds. Robbie and Rex showed 1025, 1063 the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Glorious, and I love it here, I love it there, and I'm victorious. It's so stupid. It's a terrible song.
now it's like we're just piling on. Welcome back. This is a Rex Rant.
I didn't hear that song last night. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think so. Now I think it's basically post win, but not always. I don't know.
Well, if you're a Predators fan who likes to hear the song after home wins, you haven't heard it since the All-Star break, since they're 0-3 at home.
That is true. The one win at Philadelphia. So, look, this rant is – this today is actually – I'm always – when I'm on microphone one, I was a little skittish about it. But this has been an easy show because everybody's mad about the Preds.
Well, in the rant today, all the Predators fans text in because we have a bunch to rant about.
Yeah.
Can we just read their rants during the Rex rant?
I can go through some of the texts here on the text line driven by WilsonCounnyHoney.com, 615-737-1025. Chuck, so what you're saying is David Poile has handcuffed this team with Duchesne, Johansson, and Forsberg. Brian says, meanwhile, at the Preds facility, it looks like a picture of the Titanic sinking. Wayne says, if I was Poile, I would move a player today to try to get the team's attention. Moving a player at this point has to be strategic and for the purpose of improving your team, right?
Message sending.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's like the whole thing that with Stillman about firing Hines, like it's going to be some boost to this team. I just really don't buy that. Joel says, can Adam go over the problems with trying to move Duchesne, Joey, and Granlund? Would Poile be willing to retain some salary? I really don't want to lose Ekholm. And we've also talked to Adam about, a buyout at some point. They've bought out Turris, which is one of the worst moves, of course, that Poile's made during this stretch. I don't know how much appetite you would have to continue buying out contracts. But I think at some point something like that would be possible. And there is, I guess, salary retention, too, in a deal, something like that. But it's the same idea, right? Except you could get something back, potentially, picks back.
So David Poile has never retained salary in a trade for as long as that has been.
He also
allowed,
never used to do no movement clauses.
That is true. So if you want to talk about buyouts, so if the Predators bought out Ryan Johansson, who after this season I believe has 2 years left on his contract, the Predators would carry a 2.666667, so basically $2 million and 2/3, $2.666 million cap hit through 2027. So that means they would be paying, they would have about $4.6 million in dead money on their cap for at least a few years because the Kyle Turris buyout continues. So, is it worth it? You'll save five-ish million against the cap for 2 years on Ryan Johansson, but then you'll have to carry some dead money after that. I'd be curious if that were an option, because honestly that doesn't sound that terrible.
I think it's something that could potentially be on the table. Unnamed texture says, time for the Preds to blow this thing up like the bathroom at Taco Bell. Wow. That got aggressive. Brady wasn't
we did
Hines.
Not need that.
Yeah, we didn't know. Sorry. I didn't have to read it either. Brady says, wasn't Hines supposed to be great at developing young players?
Was that Jared's burner text?
It might be. Brady, quote unquote, Brady.
Well, it's Brady. It's if Brady, Tom Brady, Jared, it all comes together.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Jared's probably pounding that. Has Jared seen 80 for Brady, you think?
Oh, I bet you he was there in the front row on day one. I haven't asked him that, but he must have.
He's had to have seen it, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. No, I'm sure, yeah.
In his TB12 shirt?
Yeah, exactly, after watching
With his avocado ice cream, sneaking it in.
Right.
To the,
Right, yeah. Right. No.
We'll have to ask him that.
Yeah.
I'm surprised I haven't.
Well, maybe next time you go to a Preds game with him.
Yeah.
See if he wants to go tomorrow. Yeah. So I do want to... Again, revisit just the general idea of my idea of the goalie, moving a goalie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with me?
Yes.
That basically, like, that has to be part of the solution moving forward when you have two goalies of that one quality. I mean, one of the top five goalies in the league. UC Saros is one of the top five goalies in the league.
I would agree with that.
And then a prospect, and, we don't know what Askarov is going to be, but there's really not much indication that he's not going to be what people thought he was on draft day.
Yeah, look, there haven't been that many high-profile goalie trades that I can think of in recent memory. The first one that popped into my head was the trade that the Avalanche made with the Coyotes in the summer of 2021 to acquire Darcy Kemper. And the return on that was Connor Timmins, who actually now plays for Toronto, but I believe Timmins was a high second-round pick by the Coyotes, like the first pick of the second round. They got a 2022 first-round pick and a 2024 third-round pick, which was conditional. And then last year, it was actually also the Avalanche, when they traded for Alexander Georgiev from the New York Rangers. He was worth a third-round pick and a two third-round picks and a fifth-round pick. Now, I would argue, of course, that Juuse Saros is a better goaltender than both Darcy Kemper, although he did win the Stanley Cup, and Alexander Georgiev. So to me, I think that Juuse Saros could – I mean, Juuse Saros to me could be worth – at his current price and his state of play could be worth at least two first-round picks to me. Now, what could that mean? I talked about this with Jared last night as well. A first-round pick, it could be two actual first-round picks, or it could be a first-round pick and a player that was a first-round pick,
right?
Like a first-round quality prospect. But no, I think Juuse Saros could get the Predators the type of return that jumpstarts a rebuild.
So if you are the GM and you're looking at that, are you sure that you wouldn't say, look, he's the known commodity? He's not slowing down anytime soon. I'd rather just have Juuse Saros be my goalie for a long period of time and put Askarov on the market.
Yeah, you pay. Look,
I mean, your clock obviously ends sooner if you go that route, but Saros is a top five goalie in the league.
Think about what the Predators could have received for Elli Tolvanen if they had traded him instead of bringing him over. Like, considering how he played at the Olympics and considering how he played in the KHL, that potential. Like, you know, teams will pay for potential. I mean, Askarov is one of two of the top goalie prospects in the NHL. So, and he made a spot start earlier this season. I believe it was in Montreal. So, you know, the potential is there. Teams will pay for potential.
So, okay, so compare that potential haul to what you just said about Saros.
Yeah, that's the hard part because, as you said, Saros is a known commodity. So you know, like, teams have plenty of data on Saros, which they may be more comfortable paying more for than the potential of Askarov. Like, I think you get more for Saros than you do for Askarov.
But someone would say, but he's younger and the ceiling is even higher.
Yes. I mean, either way, I think both of them would get a solid to significant return.
I just was – we were talking the other day. It's like, is there someone now – because you're right that – I mean, I hearken back to when my beloved – my childhood Red Wings traded for Bob Esenza at the trading deadline in 94 and finally got Tim Cheveldae out of there. It did not work out at all. But Chris Osgood came in and they lost to San Jose. Anyway, is there a team out there who would be like, boy, you had Saros right now, plus we have him the next 2 years at five? We're winning the cup with
Edmonton.
Him. Okay, McDavid. McDavid for Saros straight up.
Edmonton.
Easy. Done. Fine. Just Dreisaitl.
Edmonton needs a goalie. Los Angeles needs a goalie. You know, I'm thinking about teams
Toronto.
There. Toronto. Toronto. I mean, Ilya Samsonov is having a fine season. You know, I think Vegas is okay. To me, like, Edmonton needs a goalie.
But that's probably an offseason situation.
That's what I think. I think a Saros trade would be, you know, I don't know if that's a deal you pull off in season. I think that's like a draft day type trade.
All right. We will revisit this Preds discussion today. It's popping. But when we come back, we got our weekly visit with TD Teron Davenport. Talk a little NFL and Titans on Robbie and Rex Show at 102.5, 106.3, The Game.